we may serve effectively and graciously as we are able. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thanks. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Emery, Holzman, Justice, Kevney, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Leibla, McKenna, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Romine, Roop, Sater, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson.
Senator from 10th. Senator from Polk. A quorum is present. The Missouri Senate is now in session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 17th day, Thursday, February 7th, 2013.
Mr. President.
Senator.
I move further reading the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though it had been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion, it shall prevail. Say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have three guests with me today. On the your right and my left is John Stouffer and his wife Terry from Neosho, Missouri, and one of my dearest friends, Jay Mitchell from Seneca. I would ask the body to make them feel...
Will all the guests of the Senator from Newton please rise for recognition by the Senate. Introductions, petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions.
Mr. President.
Senator.
I move that Senate Resolution 237 be taken up for adoption.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion, it shall prevail. Say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The resolution is before the body.
Mr. President, I move that Senate Resolution 237 be adopted.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the annual employee resolution that required by the Missouri Statute 21.155. The employee resolution sets employee pay rate ranges as well as authorizes Senate staff to continue employment during the interim after adjournment of the General Assembly. The resolution authorizes 83.5 FTEs for the Senate operations, which is the same number of FTE authorized in 2012.
Does any senator wish to be heard? Seeing none, Senator from Newton is recognized to close.
I close.
The Senator renews his motion on adoption of the resolution. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The resolution is adopted. We're on the order of business of resolutions. Concurrent. Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a concurrent resolution.
Well, okay, then I was in the process of saying we were on concurrent resolutions. I hadn't really said it.
I'm sorry. What order are we on, Mr. President?
Concurrent resolutions.
Okay.
Send your resolution forward. Care to explain it, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a concurrent resolution which deals with urging our federal delegation about the importance of extending the Keystone XL pipeline in the United States, and it would come through our state.
Thank you, Senator. Will be printed in the journal.
Thank you.
Concurrent resolutions. Introduction of bills. Senator from the first.
Yes, Mr. President, I have a bill pertaining to Social Security numbers on professional applications.
Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 289, introduced by Senator Sifton, an act relating to professional applications containing Social Security numbers.
Care to explain?
Self-explanatory, Mr. President.
Introduction bill, Senator from 13th.
President, I have a bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 290, introduced by Senator Walsh, an act relating to campaign finance.
Senator.
Necessary.
Introduction of bills. Senator from the second.
Bills.
Send your bills forward.
They are self-explanatory, Mr. President, and they need no explanation.
Read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 291, introduced by Senator Roop, an act relating to awarding state contracts to vendors employing individuals with qualifying disabilities.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 292, introduced by Senator Roop, an act relating to workers' compensation tax overpayments.
Senator from Johnson.
Thank you very much. I have a bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 293, introduced by Senator Pierce, an act relating to the transfer of property by the governing bodies of certain public institutions of higher education.
Senator.
Thank you. This is a bill about the transfer of property by the governing bodies of higher institutions of higher education.
Thank you. Introduction of bills.
Thank you.
Introduction of bills.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 15th District, for what purpose do you rise?
I have two bills.
Please send your bills forward. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 294, introduced by Senator Schmidt, an act relating to Public Service Commission intervention in certain legal proceedings.
Senator, would you like to explain your bill?
No.
Madam Secretary, please read the second bill.
Senate Joint Resolution number 18, introduced by Senator Schmidt, an act or a joint resolution relating to appointment commissions.
Senator, would you like to explain this bill?
No.
Thank you for your concise answer. Introduction of bills. Senator from Andrew, for what purpose do you rise?
I have an entire legislative package to send forward, Mr. President.
Send your legislative package to the dais. Madam Secretary, when the package arrives, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 295, introduced by Senator Lauger, an act relating to paid members of any fire department or fire district.
Senator, would you like to explain this bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. This is good government legislation that we've had for the last couple of years that would allow those first responders to partake in the political process as long as they do it outside on their own time.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 296, introduced by Senator Lauger, an act relating to college or university police officers.
Senator, would you like to explain this bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. A court ruling about a year and a half ago actually changed the law in that there's now a question whether university police officers can enforce state statutes on their streets. This would codify the way that it's always been practiced, so that if the Secretary of the Senate goes speeding through a university, they have the ability to pull her over and issue a summons.
Thank you for that explanation, Senator. Madam Secretary, read the third bill.
Senate Bill number 297, introduced by Senator Lauger, an act relating to rate making for water utilities.
Would you like to explain this bill, Senator?
No explanation necessary.
Madam Secretary, read the fourth bill.
Senate Joint Resolution number 19, introduced by Senator Lauger, a joint resolution relating to term limits for statewide elected officials.
Senator, would you like to explain this bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. This would place 8-year term limits on all of the statewide offices so that every office is on an equal playing field. Thank you, Mr. President.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire the Secretary if we have messages from the Governor? I believe there are appointment letters. If so, I would ask the reading be waived and the letters be printed in the journal.
There are letters. Seeing no objection, the reading shall be waived and they will be printed in the journal.
Mr. President, would you check the Secretary and see if there are messages from the House? If they are, please have them read.
There are messages from the House. Madam Secretary, please read those messages.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute House Bill 87, entitled An Act Relating to Certain Benevolent Tax Credits with an Emergency Clause. Emergency clause adopted, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. I would ask that you call the calendar.
Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill 41. The Senator from the Great Northwest, East Lewis County. For what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill number 41 be taken up for third reading and final passage.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Lewis. Senator, would you like to change that motion? You're asking for a motion for third read, and we're on the perfection calendar.
Perfection. I move that Senate Bill 41 be brought before the Senate for perfection.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Lewis. All those in favor of those motions signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 41 is a bill that just reinforces the DNR permitting process. All kinds of business owners all across our great state have to go and actually hire engineers to do the studies for it. They have to pay, and sometimes a lot of money for these permits, but those permits should allow them to operate within certain parameters. This bill says that as long as they operate within those certain parameters and do not cause actual property damage, they cannot be sued for a permitted use of their property. The EPA actually encourages the type of coverage described in this bill, as it puts more emphasis on the permitting process and encourages more people to go forward and get those permits. Senate Bill 41 would protect our state's current and future business owners who are currently forced to invest their hard-earned money and sometimes thousands of dollars and time in the permitting process. and that's to protect themselves from the continual threat of nuisance lawsuits. We have business owners who go to bed every night and wake up every morning wondering if today is the day someone will decide to sue them and try to put them out of business. Business owners who are already diligently following the plans that have been outlined in the permit that they have obtained. They're following the laws and the regulations that our state has put before them to abide by in their business operations. And they should not have to live with that fear of being sued for a nuisance, as long as they're operating within the confines of that permit. Businesses such as dry cleaners, auto body repair shops, concrete and gravel, concrete facilities, gravel quarries, sawmills, wood processing, that's just a few that all have to get permits from the state. With that, Mr. President, I'd like to inquire of the senator from Putnam County.
Senator from Putnam. Do you yield to an inquiry to the senator from Lewis?
Yes, the senator from the Northwest yields to the senator from the Northeast.
Strictly semantics, Senator. He yields. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I know I said Putnam County. I thought I might have caught you a little bit off guard. That's one of the great counties that got taken away from me and given to you this last year. But
yep.
It is a great county, and I enjoyed representing that, working for those people. And I know you will, too. You do
another wonderful
job.
People. They vote like 83% Republican.
It was a good county.
There's only 2,300 of them, but, man, when they show up, they're good to go.
It was a good county. Senator, when you look at a permit, I know this went through your committee, and these permits, I think you believe, and I believe that when you spend the time and the money to get these, they should be worth something, shouldn't they?
Well, here's my simple thought on this as we listen to this go through committee. As we've had discussion about this in the past, you know, when a level, whether it's the federal level, state level, in this case we're talking about state level, whenever guidelines are given for permits, so they said here are thresholds that you need to meet in order for you to be permitted in our state. Whenever that happens, and the company then meets the thresholds necessary to get a permit, and they've agreed to the oversight, they've agreed to meet those thresholds which they've already met, at some point they have done everything that we have asked them to do, we being society as a whole, through those government agencies. Now, what I believe is once they've met those thresholds, assuming they maintain those thresholds, they should not have additional legal liability that's created outside of that. Now, if they are negligent, if they do something that disproportionately negatively impacts someone else, then absolutely. I mean, there's always that option. But one of the things that I think why your bill passed overwhelmingly out of committee is the understanding that if you're going to have an economic environment in your state that is conducive to job creation, the reality is there's not just one thing, there's not one silver bullet. It's a reasonable and fair environment from a regulatory perspective. It's a fair and balanced tax perspective, the tax code, and it's also a fair and balanced legal environment. And unfortunately, today we don't have a legal environment in this state. It's one of the worst in the nation. There's a great imbalance. And I have a great article. I should have brought it up. It's a plaintiff's firm in Kansas that Lawyers Weekly or whatever that publication is. There's actually a press release where a Kansas plaintiff's firm announces the way that Kansas views plaintiffs, meaning they typically side with defendants. They side, not always, but in many cases with business. this plaintiff's firm is moving out of Kansas and into Missouri because it's easier to sue people here than it is there. Like, that tells you something about the legal environment we have in our state.
But that really takes away from the value of having a permit issued by our state, doesn't it?
Yeah, and what you're doing is you're not even trying to fix the overall legal climate. You're just saying, hey, listen, if you're a permitted industry or entity, is maybe probably the better way of saying it, if you're a permitted entity, you meet the thresholds that allowed you to be given the permit, you maintain those thresholds, then, hey, you can't be sued outside of that for nuisance, if I remember right.
Right, nuisance. Well, but if you damage somebody's property...
No, that's if you're negligent, if you disproportionately and negatively impact someone else, then you can be. I mean, there's a legitimate issue there. But, you know, and you and I have lived through this... We lived through it last year or the year before. I guess it would have been the year before when we dealt with many of the ag nuisance issues that kept coming up. And although it's not perfect, by dealing with that perspective, it helped. And what you're trying to do here now, you know, if your bill passes and it becomes law, Senator, you're not dramatically putting Missouri on a playing field that other states don't have. You're just trying to actually make it more balanced. Actually,
there are some other states that do have a type of a permit shield.
Sure. And actually, some of our border states have pretty strong permit shields, if I remember right. Iowa, I remember, was really... really good, as we talked about, as we went through that stuff a couple of years ago.
Probably with other law, they're better than we are here, too. But, no, it makes common sense that if you have spent good time, or, you know, your time, which time is money, and a lot of money on engineering studies and the permit process, and these aren't very cheap either.
Well, I just think it's common sense that if a threshold is set that you have to meet... to be permitted, you as a business meet that threshold. You as a business maintain that threshold. That you as a business have certain legal protections that also come with that. And you know what? If through new technology, new research, for whatever sound science drives the changing of those thresholds and they are increased, then so be it. But to just artificially, arbitrarily allow plaintiffs' firms to continue to attack and erode away the economic base of our state is just not good public policy for the long term.
That's true. It's not. It actually hurts our businesses that we have here, and it could tend to drive them out of state into other businesses. We've seen enough businesses leave our fine state of Missouri to go to other states, and I think that what we can do to keep our business climate healthy here, this would be something good to do.
Well, you know, one of the things I think is important about this, and the reason this is so fitting, is, you know, we're having this great debate right now about what is Missouri going to do that's going to attract people to our state. And we've watched as Kansas last year took some pretty bold initiatives on how they're dealing with income tax. If the governor's state address is any indication, they're going to move even further on that initiative. We are going to counter with that with the senator from the 8th, who's going to bring forward a very bold proposal. Anything short of bold and big thoughts in that proposal would be, I guess, could be defined as failure. And I know the senator from the 8th will not let that happen. And so as we work through all that, part of this is about, Senator, how do you get people to come to our state? How do you get people to grow in our state? How do you get the super wealthy to stay in our state? Some of the folks sitting over here on the bench in that fancy pinstripe suit, you know, just great people who want to help, want to live in our state and spend some money in our state. And we got to make sure that as they're going to invest in our state, they feel confident that they're going to be treated fair.
Well, and some of these, like dry cleaners and that could be a family business that you want to pass on to your children too, you know.
And no, without, there's no doubt.
If they face the type of threats that could be before them now, without this bill, then they might have to leave. Might not have something to pass down to the family.
Senator,
what?
Are you finished, Senator, or did you have anything else for me?
I was going to inquire of another senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from
Lewis. President, I'd like to inquire of the senator from Boone.
Senator from Boone.
Yes.
Do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from the northeast section of Missouri?
I do, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Good evening.
Senator, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm good. It's nice to be back in Jeff City.
It is.
You know what happened when I got here today?
What?
I had a whole bunch of flowers on my table in my office.
From whom?
My wife.
Really?
Yes. Sent me a lovely.
Upcoming
Everybody's
Valentine's Day or just?
By. Everybody's welcome to come by and see it. It's nice.
I'm going to come by and see it.
I was.
That's very forced. Nice. I don't think my wife has ever sent me flowers.
Oh, wow. Wonder if she's listening.
I doubt she's listening, so that probably won't change.
Senator, we've been talking about the permit process and the value of a permit, and I'm sure you have a feeling on the value of a permit, don't you?
I do, and, you know, having spent a lot of time in the environmental field, and this is something that you and I talked about when your bill was in committee, and really, I mean, one big aspect of this bill, and I know it's been portrayed as only being an agricultural issue. It's not. It's for manufacturing and industrial as well. And the issue that it comes down to is, you know, business can't handle uncertainty. And in the realm of environmental compliance, if they know what something is, and even if it's expensive, if you tell them that ahead of time, they can make plans based on that and decide to do or not to do something. It's the uncertainty of investing capital and then having circumstances change on you. So in the concept of an air permit or a water permit or the permits that you're talking about in your bill, let's say that you're going to build a factory and you emit particulate, which is just another way of saying dust. And so you get a permit from DNR that regulates how much particulate you can put out. Because all environmental permits are permits to pollute. That's what they all are. You're just being told that the public says it's acceptable at some level to pollute. So let's say that you emit particulate. You get a permit, you know in your particular industry, whether it's concrete or whatever else you're making, you're going to emit so much, you can't meet that standard. So in building your plant, you're going to spend X millions of dollars on the technology built into your plant to make sure that you can meet that amount that's going to be in your permit.
And Senator, the state looks at that and says, yes, this is a healthy level that
we Right, and keep in mind, when you're talking about environmental permit, there are several different aspects. First of all, there's an empirical science-based aspect to it, which is whatever it is that you're emitting, if it's innocuous, then fine. If it's not, there's some health risk associated with it. There's empirical data, which means reproducible scientific data that X amount of what you're emitting in the air affects X population, usually based on children and the elderly. And so, therefore, you are going to be limited. And remember now that we've got baseline standards on PSD-related permits, it's not just you, it's everyone in your area on a baseline of what can be emitted. So that is done. Then on top of that, from kind of the threshold from a scientific basis, there's a hearing held in your area. People are notified. It's public noticed. And they can come in and talk about all the things that would impact them differently in their particular region or neighborhood about this permit. And that goes into the permitting process. You know, some of these permits take anywhere from 18 to, you know, 24 months to issue or longer because DNR puts a lot of thought process into them. But when you get to the end of that process, you have a permit that reflects all of those things and what you're allowed to emit.
And it's science-based.
Correct. That's right.
And along the line of permits, are there follow-up inspections? DNR actually comes out there?
Right. And remember, on your permit, because especially on new construction, you have to submit your construction plans. So literally, DNR is going to review what you're going to put on the stack from an engineering perspective to make sure it's going to work,
right,
and either they approve it or disapprove it, in addition to just setting the standard of what you're allowed to emit. Once you get that construction permit and you finish construction, then you have to get an operating permit. So you've met all the requirements in the building permit, but in the construction permit, but you can't even flip the switch on until you get the operating permit, which is a whole additional round of going through public notice and everything else. And when you get that, what you've got is basically a permit to pollute something in some amount that through empirical data and through all the public hearings has been determined by the state of Missouri and their authority to do this, that what you're emitting is acceptable at a public level, basically.
And there's generally a buffer in there that they put in place as far as safety.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the standards are very conservative. There's
yeah, no they might say, okay, 50's all right, but we'll give you a permit to operate with 5.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, there's quite a buffer put in there. And are those permits good for life?
Most permits are 5 years. It depends, but they come up for renewal. Yeah, and you have to be inspected at least once a year. Some places get inspected quarterly. You know, everyone's at least a year. And, you know, your permit basically comes up for renewal, and frequently they, as you renew your permit every 5 years, basically your emission standard gets ratcheted down. So it usually gets more and more difficult to comply.
That's what I've experienced with some businesses that I've known. They
and that's the standard, both not only with Missouri DNR, but also with EPA.
Yeah. And EPA, actually, they encourage this type of
all permits, air permits, water permits that are issued by DNR, EPA sees all those. They usually talk on staff level to staff level. And if EPA doesn't like what's going to come out in a permit, they will usually call the department and say, we're going to file an objection to your permit. We don't like it. Usually, 99% of the time, that causes DNR to then go back and put whatever EPA wanted in the permit in the permit.
And EPA actually encourages this type of...
Correct. Because remember, all those standards, for the most part, in most of the programs, all those standards that DNR is meeting in those permits, those are federal standards. We just allow them to carry it out. They're a delegated agency to carry out those federal standards. But basically, what's in the permit is, on a public level, a determination of what is permissible. And so what you get into is somebody spends, let's say, $5 million on their plant complying with what's in the permit, thinking that is what the public standard is for discharge from their facility, but then they get sued and they are subject to a court telling them, well, yeah, that may be on your permit, but we can make a determination that it's a lower threshold.
And then all of a sudden, for no reason.
Well, for whatever reason, yeah. You know, the evidence shows, but remember, all those things that go into that determination should have been taken into consideration when the permit was granted, and they usually are. Now, remember, what you're talking about in your bill is, it really is, once the state has made a determination of what's a permissible discharge, it's a certain level of protection in that. Things that are beyond that, and so, for example, we talked about a bill that, when this bill was up before, and one of the senators previously who had a quarry in his district. So a quarry obviously would have to have an air permit for particulate matter, and that standard would be set. But if you live next to the quarry, and the quarry's blowing out rocks on your house and blowing out your windows, that would not be protected in your bill because that's not something that's addressed in the permit.
And that could be damages, too.
Well, sure, it would. That would lead to actual damages
for the property.
Beyond
nuisance.
Right. But that's not protected in your bill.
That's not, and I'm not trying to do that with this bill.
I mean, that's something completely different than basically the public standard that was determined by the agency and then reflected in your permit.
Okay. Well, thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Hopefully we've answered some questions.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Lewis has a perfection motion on Senate Bill 41. Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 10th District, for what purpose do you rise?
Inquire of the Senator from Boone.
Senator from Boone, do you yield to an inquiry?
Nope.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I just had a quick, I was listening to your conversation. I just had a quick question because I can't remember where we stand on some of the legislation that we've passed over the last couple of years on private nuisance actions. And I'm sorry to put you on the spot because we didn't talk about this offline, but it's my understanding, didn't we last year or the year before pass some legislation that did it limit private nuisance actions to one time, or do you remember exactly what it was that we did?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I mean, what this body did was basically say on the distinction between temporary nuisance and permanent nuisance, that rather than coming back on a temporary nuisance over and over and over again, which Missouri was an anomaly on that, you get one shot at temporary nuisance.
Okay.
And if you come back the second time, it's a permanent nuisance.
Okay. And so I'm taking a look at this. Would this prevent landowners from bringing a temporary nuisance action for recovery of damages if they meet all regulations?
This bill, as I read it, I think what it would do is if you have a permit that allows you to discharge X amount of, let's say, particulate matter.
Sure.
And you were to bring a nuisance action based on that discharge of level of particulate matter, I think you would be. I think it would prohibit that.
It would be prohibited.
Yeah, I think you would have to allege something individual and unique to your property that was not contemplated. And you know, you can really think about this in terms of a public versus a private nuisance. And if you really think about it, I mean, what the bill does is essentially identify public nuisance and clarify that you can't bring a public nuisance if you meet the public standard. But just like the difference between public and private nuisance, you can only bring a private nuisance if something that you suffer is individual and distinct from the public nuisance. That's the only way you can bring a private nuisance. So I think the analogy of the quarry with the rocks that blow out and blow your windows out, that's something separate from what the permit was designed to address.
But in the situation of an odor, I mean, which a lot of these, I think, cases are brought based on odor.
Well, I mean, you may be talking about agricultural cases. I see this bill as applying much more to dry cleaners, car washes, you know, manufacturing facilities, but it would apply to ag operations as well.
Okay. I was curious. I got a lot of phone calls on this one today, believe it or not. I think my new district is pretty rural, and I got a lot of phone calls both ways on this today. So I don't practice in this area of law, so I was trying to figure out the difference between private and public, and I was also trying to figure out what we had done in the past, and I appreciate your inquiry. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 10th.
I have an amendment.
Send your amendment forward.
Mr. President, I have this amendment has been distributed. I would request a waiver of its reading.
Seeing no objection, the reading shall be waived. Would you like to explain your amendment, Senator?
Yes, Mr. President. I would move for the adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this amendment has to do with, if everyone's looking at Senate Bill 41, on the, I think it's line... trying to see which one. Okay, line two, or lines one and two, actually. It says, a person shall not maintain an action to enjoin, abate, or recover damages for a private nuisance based upon an air emission or water solid or solid waste discharge. I changed that to enjoin or abate, and I removed the recover damages. And this is what I'm thinking on this one. Mr. President, my concern is that I understand when a business has invested a significant amount of capital to build something, if they've met all of their permit requirements, that we shouldn't stop them from operating. I agree with that. I, however, disagree that we should stop individuals from being able to sue and recover damages for a private nuisance. My feeling is that we should be allowing the industry to keep moving forward. They've made the investment. They did everything by the books. At the same time, if their neighbors have been harmed, I don't think we should prevent their ability to recover damages. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
The Senator from the 10th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Bill Number 41. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 1st District, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from the 10th.
Senator from the 10th, do you yield? She does. Proceed.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You know, it strikes me that there are a range of different scenarios in which this can play out. I know of a case where I think involving a power plant or another substantial facility, I think on the western side of the state, where there had been an oversight in the permitting process, but the thing had basically been built. Some permits had been issued, but apparently there was one that hadn't been, and, you know, the money was spent, the facility was finished, all ready to operate, and somebody ran to the courthouse and said, don't let it open. And I think ultimately the court said, no, you really should have been here a year or 2 years ago, earlier in the process. And I can't recall if that case was decided on latches or some other ground, but certainly that can play out. But as I understand your amendment, you're basically what you're saying is, as the bill does, once the permit is issued, no injunction is stopping this, right?
Right.
And So your view is that once a permit has been issued, whether it's under the circumstances that give rise to the carve-out in Section 2 or otherwise, that the damages should remain on the table?
That's correct. Here's my thinking, and if I am incorrect in my legal analysis of this, I would love for someone to explain it to me. Like I said, I do not practice in this area of law, but here's my understanding. A few years back, we had, it may have even been last year, we had a bill that came to the floor that said that if there is someone, and I'm just going to make a scenario where you have someone who owns a private residence, and I'm just going to use an agricultural reference because that's the one that all the calls came into my office today about. You've got something that moves in, large agricultural operation moves in next door, and then it starts to stink. And it happens. Everybody knows it. I don't think any of us can deny that a lot of these large, if anyone's driven across Highway 50 across southern Kansas, I mean, there's several hundred miles there where you can't even breathe because it smells so bad. So but that's not the argument we're having here today. So a few years back, it was my understanding that Missouri was the only state in the union where you could sue once for damages, and if you won, you could keep suing over and over and over again if they did not cure the problem that you had won on originally. And we as a body passed a bill, and I believe it eventually became law, that said you only got one bite at the apple. My concern is that if we pass this piece of legislation without my amendment, you won't even get that one bite at the apple.
Zero bites at the apple.
You will be living your life in your home and either an agricultural entity or anything you can think of that makes some sort of bad neighbor moves in next door, and then all of a sudden, because they are following all of the state regulations and they've received a permit, you no longer have the ability to bring an action for nuisance. And the thing that's frustrating is you also may lose your opportunity to sell your home, because who's going to want to buy a house that's next to whatever the property is now, or whatever the business is. Now, a lot of times the business is not a bad neighbor, but sometimes they are, just by the very nature of the work that they're doing there. And so I don't want to take away a private right of action to recover damages, at least that one time, for individuals who were just living on their property and a neighbor moved in who was causing some sort of nuisance.
Well, and particularly in the case of somebody whose home value might be impacted, that's something that can be monetized, right? I mean, you can have appraisers, frequently dueling appraisers, give the before and after, and that's something a finder of fact can actually set a real number on. But for the adjacent homeowner, of course, once it's built, if it causes damage, and that's a fact you have to prove, of course, that ship has sailed. Injunctive relief at that point for them would be off the table, both under the bill and under your amendment. But you were inquiring a moment ago of the senator from Boone, and I was momentarily looking at something else, so I didn't quite catch. But I think one of the topics you were discussing with him was the breadth of this bill. Are we just talking about agricultural property, or are we talking about essentially any source of pollution in our state?
Yeah, and it is the senator from Boone's, well, I think it's everybody's opinion, that this bill actually is not limited to agriculture, that it is for any industry that meets state regulations and has received proper permitting.
And that's the intent?
That's the intent, yes.
And not to go too far afield here, but last week we were debating occupational disease, and I will tell you that there are some plants, including in the St. Louis region, that have generated some particulate matter that has been released into the air in the neighborhoods surrounding the plants, and that particulate matter causes fatal disease. And so in that case, if your amendment doesn't pass, somebody who lives or lived or has lived across the street from, say, an asbestos plant or a plant that handled asbestos fibers that was built after they moved in such that they didn't come to the nuisance,
that person may be deprived of their right of any recovery in the absence of the amendment, or is there something I'm not reading correctly?
Well, I guess that depends on whether they have a cause of action other than private nuisance, because this
Point
bill
taken.
Is limited to enjoining or abating, or I'm sorry, yeah, adjoining or abating the allegedly offending behavior or recovering of damages under a private nuisance action. So there may be very well a wrongful death,
some other tort theory.
Some other tort theory that might be available to them. I don't know that.
And I understand that, but I would say, I mean, isn't it sort of the classical cause of action that arises for neighbor is doing something that's damaging my property, private nuisance? I mean, that's
right.
The dominant form of these actions, right? A different standard, different things that you have to prove to establish private nuisance than you would, say, wrongful death or negligence.
Right. And what I'm trying to do with this amendment is essentially split the baby, so to speak, because here's the reality of this. If a company has invested in a plant or let's just call it a plant because I don't know what else it would be, and they have gone through all of the investment that it takes to get set up and they've done everything the way they need to do, we don't want to have them be shut down after they've made that I get that. I understand that if they're playing by the rules. At the same time, if their neighbor has also been playing by the rules and if their property is going to lose property value dramatically, and they're either never going to be able to sell it or they're going to have to sell it at some ridiculously low cost, I want them to be able to at least have a day to go to a court and say, I think that I have been harmed here, and I want them to be able to try to make their case. They may not win, but I don't want to take that ability away from them.
Well, I share your concern. I appreciate your amendment and intend to support it. Thank you.
Senator from Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the senator from Audrain.
Senator from Callaway, do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I listened to your discussion there, and as I was listening, some of the things I think that maybe you were talking about were things that maybe weren't even permitted. You were talking about some agricultural operations, and generally they're permitted for water and not odor or air. And if that's the case, this only protects them for what they're permitted for.
Okay, so...
And if there's an unseen thing that is not noticed during the permitting process, that's why I've got Section 2 in there, Senator.
Okay, Section 2 says a license, permit, or order that is issued after public comment by a municipal, county, state, or federal government and subject to...
No.
That one? Down at the very bottom.
Yep, down at the bottom.
The provisions of subsection 1 of this section shall not apply if the permit or order creates a condition not reasonably foreseeable at the time of issuance, or if the permit holder purposefully fails to disclose facts. Okay, so that makes sense. No, and I'm glad that that's in there. I guess my concern is that it says for a private nuisance based upon an air emission or water or solid waste discharge. And so I guess my concern is that it lists all of those things as being protected.
Well, if they do have to get the permit for each one of those, but this only protects them for what they get a permit for. And some of these may have to get a permit for water, some may for air, some may for solid waste, whatever.
Yeah.
There's a whole list. I mean, even campgrounds have to be permitted.
Sure.
I've got a whole list here. Car washes, crushing plants, dams even have to be permitted. Now, a dam I wouldn't think would be permitted for any dust or anything like that, but it would be for the water that they pass through or maybe even something else that I don't even know about. But I'm sure there are some other things that you were talking about earlier that would be outside of the permit of what they were actually permitted for. I think your amendment really weakens the value of the permit.
You think that it weakens the value of the permit if someone can still sue for a private nuisance?
If,
for damages?
If, as long as they're operating within the confines of what our state has issued and says it is acceptable.
Sure. Well, you know what? I don't think I can deny that my amendment weakens your statute. I'm not going to deny that at all, because what I'm trying to say is that even if that new company is operating within all of the state's permits, regulations, statutes, and everything else, there still may be a neighbor who has lost some property value, who in his or her own mind has been harmed, and I don't want to limit their ability to seek damages in court. I don't want to shut down the company that is allegedly offending the neighbor. I don't want to make them have to stop whatever operations they've got going on, but I don't want to cut off the neighbor's ability to bring an action in court. And so to that end, yeah, I think, Senator, I'm going to agree with you that this does water down your bill, and that's my intent. Sorry, I'm really honest today.
Well, I didn't really expect much different, I'm sorry. But I'm trying to protect our good businesses that have had the good faith to go forward and spend the money to get the engineering done on that facility. They've spent money, they've spent time, and trying to keep their, maybe in a lot of cases, a family business, like I said earlier, keep that going. And I feel that your amendment would weaken that considerably.
And I appreciate that. And that's why I didn't, you know, that's why I don't have any intention of trying to stop this bill, you know, with or without my amendment. But I want to tell you this. I want to protect the investment from those companies, too. That's why I don't want to say that there should be an ability to enjoin them or abate them. I think we should leave that in. What I don't want to do is cut off private citizens' ability to seek damages in a court of law if, in fact, they can prove that the new neighbor has caused them some harm.
Okay. Well, Senator, since I can't talk you out of your amendment, I guess I'll just encourage everybody to vote no.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Further discussion? Senator from Buchanan?
To inquire of the Senator from the 11th.
Senator from the 10th?
10th, sorry.
Senator from the 10th, do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Sorry, I had your number wrong there.
That's okay.
I wanted to ask you a question about not necessarily your amendment, but we've been discussing some wording in line 13 of the bill. Would you look at that real quick?
Line 13?
Huh?
Okay.
And it says reasonably foreseeable. It says the provisions of subsection 1 of this section shall not apply if the permit or order creates a condition not reasonably foreseeable at the time of issuance. Well, we're wondering if it would be better to say foreseen, like it was not foreseen, instead of reasonably foreseeable. Because that way, if somebody foresaw it, it would have come up during the permitting process.
Sure.
And if, you know, who's to decide what's reasonably foreseeable or not?
I guess a court will have to decide that.
And then that would help to make it so that, hey, this was not foreseen, therefore I should be able to go to court. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think it's fine. My concern is kind of the preliminary hurdle, which is, and I understand that two was put in as a protection in the event that someone feels like one has become a barrier to them. So, I think that would be, if you wanted to offer that amendment, I would support it.
Well, I was just wondering if that would have a, you know, bigger than anticipated effect by making it the permitting process to be too voluminous or something.
Well, you know, I'm being real honest today, and I'm going to let you know I don't do anything like this in my practice of law. I don't help companies with permitting. I don't handle nuisance litigation, and my answer is I don't know the answer of whether or not that would make it if there were any unforeseen consequences. I just don't know the answer.
Your point, though, is that you want to get rid of the words recover damages.
Right.
Because you feel that, could you say it again for me?
Yeah, so I'm basically splitting the baby. I'm saying you've got a company that wants to invest and put in, let's just call it a plant of whatever type. They make the investment. They go through the permitting process. They are following every permit. They are following every statute. They are following every regulation. Okay, fine. So let's not stop what they are doing. But if there is a neighbor who has been harmed, in that neighbor's opinion, I don't want to prevent them from being able to seek damages at a court of law.
Okay, and so basically you're saying that the permitting process isn't perfect. People are hurt, so therefore you want them to be able to recover damages.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, the permitting process is still not going to stop everything that would be considered a nuisance. It's just not, because our permits allow for some things that some people would consider to be nuisances.
But what I'm saying is that since subsection 2 is supposed to kind of be the circuit breaker, I was wondering if making it from reasonably foreseeable to foreseen would be a circuit breaker that you would be happy, that would eliminate your need to get rid of the words or recover damages. Because if during the permitting process they said, oh, we foresee this, then they wouldn't issue the permit, or the process of permitting might be able to eliminate that.
Well, and my opinion is that it may have been foreseen. But the reality is that some of these alleged nuisances are foreseen and okay under the law. And so my preference would be to handle this. And like I said, I just want an up or down vote on my amendment, not trying to hold things up. But my opinion would be that I just want them to be able to go in and prove that. And I understand what you're saying about the circuit breaker, but I don't want to bar them from going into court in the first place.
To restate what you said, you think that some permitting processes would allow even foreseen bad things to happen.
Yes, I do.
And so people need to be able to recover damages.
Yeah.
I understand. Thank you for the inquiry. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. In closing, all I'm doing with this amendment is saying that companies who invest in the state of Missouri should be allowed to continue to operate their businesses as long as they are not in violation of state regulations, statutes, or the permits that they've been issued. At the same time, neighbors who have allegedly been harmed by that company moving in and building their plant next door should not be prevented from going to court and making the case that they have been harmed through a private nuisance. I close.
The senator from the 10th renews her motion that Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Bill Number 41 be adopted. As many are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary say no.
No.
The noes appear to have it. The noes do have it. The amendment is defeated. Senator from Lewis.
I ask that this bill be placed on the informal calendar.
The bill shall be placed on the informal calendar. Staying on that calendar, Senate Bill 139, the senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 139 be brought before the body.
You heard the motion by the senator from Cole. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator, the bill is before the body.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill 139 be brought up for perfection. Move for the adoption. The
Senator from Cole has moved for the perfection of Senate Bill 139. Senator, would you like to explain your bill?
I sure would. Thank you, Mr. President. I would point out to the body that this bill also has an emergency clause on it. We talked about this when the bill was introduced. This is the extension of the sunset, which is expired on December 31st of 2012, as it relates to the ability of certain public entities, you heard a lot about school districts mainly, being able to keep their records confidential in nature as it relates to security matters. It would take the sunset out until 2017, and it's pretty cut and dry. The bill was originally introduced in 2002. It went to 8. It got extended to 12, and this is simply just another extended period. I would be happy to answer any questions, Mr. President.
You've heard the motion and the explanation by the senator from Cole. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Boone, for what reason do you rise?
Quire the senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole, do you yield to the appropriations chair?
I most certainly do.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I like your bill. And I will tell you, the issue of renewing those sunsets on security plans for schools is something that I've had in a bill now for 3 years. But I've had that in a bill with some other things to strengthen Missouri's Sunshine Law to create greater transparency so that the people of this state know exactly how their government functions and they can see the inside workings as they are already supposed to see under the Sunshine Law. And so you and I have had this discussion. So for the last 3 years in my Sunshine Bill, I have had the renewal of the closure, the exemption of the Sunshine Law for the security plans. And I find it ironic that you had your bill in Judiciary. I had my bill again in Judiciary. And I couldn't help notice, but a lot of the counties and municipalities that testified specifically against my bill because they do not want to provide greater transparency for the citizens of the state of Missouri voted for your or were in support of your bill because they want part of it to pass but not the rest. And you and I have talked about this. I certainly don't in any way want to undermine the importance of what you're doing and what was in my bill as well, which is to continue out those sunsets to keep those security plans closed. But I also think it's an opportunity to provide greater transparency in the rest of the Sunshine Law and some teeth in the Sunshine Law so that the citizens of this state can actually get communications from their local governments and the state agencies as well and see how government works. Some of the things that were in my bill, for example, we take public notice from 24 hours to 48 hours. It did have some provisions in there relating to law enforcement and fines. We took that out. That's not in the latest version of my bill that we passed out of committee. And my bill, I will add, passed 7-0 out of committee. So it has been vetted by the committee. So, Senator, what I think I want to do is go ahead and take my bill, and I'm going to offer an amendment here in a minute to put it onto your bill. And I want everyone to understand it is a bill that strengthens Missouri's Sunshine Law to provide greater transparency. And one of the biggest things that it does is right now under the Sunshine Law, if you've got an intentional violation of the Sunshine Law, if you're the citizen trying to get a document, you have to file the lawsuit. You have to go to court. The burden is on you to show that documents exist, that they're not exempt under the Sunshine Law, that you're entitled to them. Then the burden shifts to the public entity to say why they didn't have to give it to you. And if you're the citizen and you prevail on that, you can get your attorney's fees and the court assesses a $1,000 fine. What I want to do, and it's in my amendment that I'm going to offer here in just a minute, it was in my bill that passed out of committee. What we do is we change that burden of proof and say if you're the citizen and you file the lawsuit and go into court, there's a presumption that all records are open, which there already is pursuant to numerous decisions by the Missouri Supreme Court, but we can't seem to get that through the heads of some government officials. But it puts the burden directly on the governmental entity to prove with their burden that they could close a record. And if they cannot do that, it's a $100 fine. And you say, well, wait a minute, you're going from a $1,000 fine to a $100 fine. The burden is shifted to the governmental entity. It's the equivalent of going from a fairly complex lawsuit to a ticket. Because what's happening right now is, and I will tell you as an attorney in private practice, I have dealt with multiple sunshine issues over and over and over again. And some entities just don't seem to learn that we have a policy in this state under the Sunshine Law that government records are open absent some exception. And so what we do is, rather than having it be this much higher standard to prove it, it's like a ticket. Because those cases right now on violations of the Sunshine Law, they're burdensome. They don't ever get brought. So you have repeat players who keep things closed. What this does is it makes it easier for the citizen to get those records and establish a record that the agency or public entity didn't comply with the Sunshine Law. And then you get, you know, by the eighth or ninth time, I would think somebody would pay attention to that. So, Senator, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to offer that amendment.
Is this a two-way inquiry?
He just wants to make sure I don't send the wrong one forward that doesn't have my name on it.
Okay. I didn't want to get you. I got you mad in committee. I think the body should know today because I spoke to somebody without asking your permission. And I was very tempted. Sometimes when you preside, somebody's shoulder gets in the right. But you know what?
I have a tendency to lean to one side.
As the president pointed out, you don't mess with the appropriations.
We run a tight ship down there.
You certainly do.
And I know you're new to the committee, but I tell you what, about a month
from now.
You
know, a lot of those people presenting are my constituents, so sometimes I just talk to them and I don't.
Well, I know, and they probably.
Secretary of the Senate is very big on rules, and I'm trying not to be like the senator from Johnson to be a rule breaker, or the senator from Christian, who's a big rule breaker. I'm trying to follow this. But, Senator, real quickly, I appreciate you recognizing the importance of being able to provide this to public entities, the underlying bill, my bill. Especially to school districts. Many school districts in my area out of the 27 have already had some requests, and it's really making them nervous. I think it's top on everybody's mind that we try to get this done. And to your credit, when I was asked to carry this bill, they pointed out to me that you have had this element in there for several years.
3 years. I've had that renewal in there for 3 years.
And if we would have passed one of those last year, even the year before, we wouldn't be here today because the sunset would have already been extended.
You know, and I'm glad that some of the governmental entities that testified against my bill, I'm glad they realize the importance of keeping those security records closed, but they equally need to recognize the importance of good, open, transparent government for the citizens of this state. So, with that, Mr. President.
Senator from Boone.
I have an amendment. It has been distributed, sending mine forward, and I would move for its adoption.
Are you requesting a waiver of the reading?
I'm requesting a waiver of the reading.
Senator from Boone. Requesting a waiver of the reading. Does any senator object? Seeing none, senators, I'd like to explain your amendment.
Yes, Mr. President. As I just mentioned, basically what this does is it has a number of things in it that strengthen Missouri's Sunshine Law. As I said, this is the form that was passed out in the committee substitute 7-0 out of the Judiciary Committee. We had a very full and complete hearing on it. And basically this would add protections to the Sunshine Law to make sure that both our local and our state governmental entities are operating in a transparent way. One other thing that I didn't mention this bill also does is right now under the Sunshine Law, certain entities can go into closed session if they're going to discuss something that's an exemption under the Sunshine Law, such as litigation or something like that. This bill does require that after that they do put something out in writing that somehow encompasses what it was, what the topic of the discussion was. They obviously don't have to disclose what the privilege was or something confidential, but at least the public has a right to know that actually what they went into closed session for was something that was truly closed. And because this is such a good government bill, Mr. President, I am going to ask for a roll call vote on my amendment.
The senator from Boone has moved for the adoption of Senate number 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on that? The first senator to their feet was the senator from Jefferson. Before I recognize him, the senator from Boone has requested a roll call vote on this amendment. Senator, do you have 4 members standing to support that roll call?
I've got. Yeah,
you do,
raise
Senator.
Your hand so we can see because you're not at your desk.
Senator, I got it. thank you. And the chair would remind you to face the front.
Just making sure I had the votes, Mr. President.
I understand. All right. Having a sufficient number. We'll have a roll call. Senator from Jefferson.
To inquire the senator from Boone.
Senator from Boone, do you yield?
I do.
Thank you, Senator. I heard your explanation, but you didn't hit 2 major parts of your amendment. One changes the number of days, actually. It goes from 24 to 48 hours on posting for meetings, but then you exempt out the General Assembly.
That is correct, and I touched on the 48 hours. The reason we've got the exemption right now under the Sunshine Law, it's 24 hours for posting, which right now with electronic communication is pretty simple to do. 48 hours is simple to do. The problem that we get into is we get into the end of session and we start having to have committee hearings and move bills in the last couple of weeks of the session.
I don't have a problem with the General Assembly. I did actually today. I was answering emails and I had a letter from one of the attorneys in Festus, Missouri, who had a, I guess this is Senate Bill 122 that.
Yes, that's correct.
That is now the amendment. He had an issue from changing it from 24 to 48 hours because his thinking is, why should the city government delay something that they could promptly decide on? And secondly, why should the General Assembly be treated differently than the city of Festus?
Because the issue is, as we get later into the session, we don't have 48 hours that we can move a bill. It just doesn't happen, especially in the last couple of weeks.
The second part is on page.
And this is the city of Festus who doesn't want to strengthen the Sunshine Law. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, that's not their point. The city attorney from the mayor wrote a letter, and it was. Their opinion that they think it's more important for the political subdivisions to promptly decide on issues rather than delay. That's why I'm inquiring of you. I'm doing this on behalf of the city of Festus. Secondly, you change the attorney's fees on page 13, mm-hmm. where it's subject to a civil penalty up to an amount of $1,000, and you change that to $100.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That seems like it's weakening the open law, the Sunshine Law, records law.
It's not. And this is a provision that's strongly supported by the Missouri Press Association. It's okay. One of the things that does, frankly, the most to strengthen the Sunshine Law, and that is by switching the burden of proof on intentional violations away from the citizen to the governmental entity that should comply with the spirit of open records. We make it easier to bring these cases, and by making it easier to bring the cases, we lower the fine from $1,000 to $100.
Okay, and then they shall, instead of may, be reimbursed for attorney's fees?
That's correct.
Okay.
And right now, it's discretionary under the Sunshine Law.
Congratulations on your 7-0 vote in committee on this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
The senator from Boone renews his motion for the adoption of Senate number 1. Other members wanting to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 10th has been on her feet. For what reason do you rise?
I inquire of the senator from Boone.
Senator from Boone, do you yield?
Nope.
Hi, Senator. I voted with you on this bill. I, at the time, didn't know that someone in my old district has a small problem, and I just wanted to talk to you about it. I don't think it really substantially affects the underlying bill of what you're trying to do, but I kind of want to tell you the situation. First
okay.
of all, I'm on page 5 of your amendment, and I've had an amendment to your amendment drafted, and it's going to be circulated so you can take a look at what I'm talking about.
Okay.
This has to do with any lease, sublease, rental agreement, or similar instrument. You know what the issue that I'm talking about
Yes,
here.
I do, and you had mentioned that to me.
And so well, actually, Senator Kevany brought up, I think, a separate.
Mr. President.
Oh, my goodness.
Senator from Johnson, for what reason
wow.
do you rise?
We should not refer to senators by their names.
Thank you, Senator. For Senator from the 10th.
Thank you.
The chair would remind you of the rules of the Senate. It's ironic that the senator from Johnson is the one that caught it, but please follow the rules of the Senate.
Mr. President,
wow.
I am terribly, terribly sorry. Please, I beg your forgiveness.
Thank you, Senator. You have the floor.
The senator from the 4th, thank you, Senator from Johnson, for being ever vigilant when it comes to the rules. The senator from the 4th had brought an issue having to do with his district. This is something a little bit different. I'm circulating an amendment to an amendment right now that I want you to take a look at. I don't have a problem with the underlying meat of what you're trying to get to mm-hmm. with lines 11 through 16. My concern is this. The Sprint Center in my previous district oftentimes has entertainers come in and sports teams and that sort of thing, and they enter into contracts with the entertainment. So the old, you know, Kid Rock doesn't want any green M&Ms, or Jay-Z must have freshly squeezed strawberry juice, or whatever it was that made that concert start so ridiculously late. The concern is that we don't want those specific contracts to be made available publicly for fear that the entertainers might balk at coming to perform in our district. So I have had an amendment drafted that just takes out, I believe, lines 12, 13, and 14.
Okay, and this is the language. Hang on, let me see where yours fits in here.
But it puts back in, entered in, okay, so basically what would happen is if you look at line 12, it takes out or any sublease of a publicly owned facility entered into between any party and the entity which shall have the rights to manage said facility. I'm taking out that sentence only.
You're taking out the provision on subleases?
Subleases, yes, because it's their fear, and you know, I'm a lawyer too. I was going to say, you're the lawyer. My concern is, and the concern of my former constituent, the Sprint Center, is that we are going to be making publicly available those contracts between the entertainment and the Sprint Center.
Okay, and I understand, and that does get into the murky area where you've got contracts that, because right now, for example, there's an exemption in the Sunshine Law for real estate contracts because you wouldn't want someone to have access to confidential discussions on a real estate price, for example. But then once that contract is done, the Sunshine Law, as it currently is and would stay this way, says it's then open.
Right.
But what you're saying is there are some contracts. I can see that, Senator.
So I'm going to be offering an amendment to your amendment because it's my understanding that if your amendment gets on, then it will be previously amended material and I won't be able to amend it. So
I suspect that
I am in the process of, I think it's been circulated. So thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 10th.
I have an amendment.
Please send the amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
It has been distributed. I would request a waiver of its reading.
Hearing no objection to the waiver of the reading. Senator from the 10th, we now have your amendment. You've moved for the adoption?
I'm getting ready to. Mr. President, I would move for the adoption of this amendment to the amendment. Mr. President, to explain this amendment to the amendment, it's on page 5 of the Senator from Boone's amendment, and it removes the sentence relating to subleases of publicly owned facilities. It leaves intact everything else, but it takes out the portion that would put information out that might be proprietary as far as the contracts between entertainment and other groups that would want to perform in any of these publicly owned facilities. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator from the 10th has moved for the adoption of the amendment to the amendment. Senate Amendment 1. Any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 9th, for what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, may I inquire of the senator from the 10th?
Senator from the 10th, would you yield to the senator from the 9th?
I do.
Proceed, Senator.
Good. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I did hear the, of course, discussion with the senator to my right. Remember, the Senator from Boone. Senator from Boone, right. you talked about, of course, the privacy issues with the, what do they call them, the list of the requirements from entertainers when they come. The writer, exactly. But it also impedes sometimes their ability to be able to get good deals with some of those acts that have come in. If they're willing to give maybe the Sprint Center a deal, maybe they normally cost $50,000 and they're willing to come down to $30,000, then they'd really rather not that be made public for fear, of course, when they go to the Cineas or the next concert dates that they would then have to give those same rates. So I did want to add that as well. It kind of impedes their ability sometimes to be able to get good prices when they're bringing entertainment in or other sports shows or some of those other things as well.
So. I appreciate that. The example I gave obviously was a little frivolous.
It was good, though.
But you're
he
absolutely right. That could take
so
away the
good.
Leveraging power of our local entities to be able to negotiate the best prices for our constituents. And I agree that's another great reason to adopt this amendment to the amendment.
Right. So good. So, Senator, thank you very much for the inquiry.
Thank you, Senator.
Any further discussion on the motion by the senator from the 10th? Seeing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
The senator from the 10th renews her motion for the adoption. All those of the opinion that shall prevail will say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary will say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the amendment to Senate Amendment Number 1. We are back on the motion of the senator from Boone for the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? The senator from the 1st has patiently been standing at his desk. Senator, for what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, to inquire of the senator from Boone.
Senator from Boone, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Well, we obviously want to get this underlying bill passed as quickly as we possibly can, right? I mean, currently the underlying provision pertaining to public facility security has sunsetted, and there is no protection right now. So we want this to move as quickly as we can, don't we?
Remember, that was in my bill last year before cities and counties who didn't want to provide greater transparency opposed it then. Otherwise, it never would have expired.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I have to tell you, having served as a school board member myself, as an attorney on the school board, as the only attorney on the school board, I personally made it my mission to make sure that we scrupulously adhere to the Sunshine Law at all times, because it's very important. And I have to tell you, I'm not sure I understand where the government entities are coming from in opposing or apparently having opposed the amendment that you're offering. I mean, what's the concern that's been expressed?
I mean, I'll tell you, my personal experience as a lawyer is there's just a lot of governmental entities who don't want to tell the public what they're doing and don't want to disclose documents when somebody from the public asks for access to them.
Well, that's really...
You know, I've been given the line before that, well, you know, maybe we'll give you access to those documents, but we're going to charge you $50 an hour legal fee to review them to make a determination of what's open and closed.
Yeah, that seems rather onerous. And
it is not provided for in the Sunshine Law.
Well, and does your amendment address that? And forgive me.
It does not, but so far that issue hasn't been litigated.
So I
suspect that the first time it gets litigated and the court says you have no authority to charge somebody $50 an hour, because we've got a Missouri Supreme Court case from mid-1990s from Judge Price that specifically says the Sunshine Law already requires you to keep your documents segregated between open and closed, yet we continuously have governmental entities that want to charge the public $50 an hour to make a determination of what's open and closed.
Yeah,
Until that gets litigated and there's a decision hanging out there saying you can't do that, that's going to keep happening.
Well, I mean, in theory, though, we could, I mean, not to be begging another amendment to your amendment here, but, I mean, in theory, that's something we could address in statute, couldn't we?
It is addressed. It's not allowed.
Which is to say...
The Sunshine Law specifically says that you can only charge a copying fee right now, and that's been the law for decades, and yet still... We have entities charging for other things that they have no authority to charge for. So it is addressed in the statute.
And I apologize. I misunderstood what you were saying. So it's simply a matter of a court enforcing it and somebody calling one of these public entities onto the carpet and actually going through and basically having a court say, yes, the law says what it says.
Right.
Got it. So I want to talk a little bit about page 8. And lines 7 through 10 of your amendment. And let me preface this with the fact that I have a constituent who is very seriously concerned about the question of how do you enforce the closed session provision? How can the public be absolutely certain that what is going on in these closed meetings is confined to the exceptions in statute and nothing more. It's something that I would say it's probably the one issue that he is the most motivated about, actually. And so could you explain to me, I mean, what your amendment does is requires the minutes to list the subjects addressed in itemization, how is that going to make sure that we get the job done in keeping closed meetings confined to the topics that are set forth in statute?
It looks like you're waiting on you. Are you waiting on an amendment there, Senator?
We're getting there. Yeah.
Well, Senator, right now, you know, there's a list of exemptions under the Sunshine Law, things that we kept closed, litigation being one of them. So when a governmental body invokes that exemption and goes into closed session, they can discuss that. Frequently, sure. Other issues I know are sometimes discussed, but they'd have to put something out that basically identifies some level of information that shows that they were justified in closing that. And, Senator, I believe you've litigated cases, haven't you?
I have litigated cases. I have actually litigated Sunshine cases.
I have as well. Now, not pertaining to Sunshine cases, but you've produced a privilege log in discovery, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. We do that quite a bit
practice. It'd be a lot like producing a privilege log.
Right.
You just have to give a description of what the information is that you say is privileged and you're not going to produce, but you don't give up so much information that you blow the privilege.
Well, and I'll tell you how we noticed it on my school board. What we would do when we posted a closed session notice, and there may have actually been a change in the law to require it, I'm not sure, but I know that our
practice
was...
You do have to post
that
you may go into closed session.
Yeah, well, but in the notice, we would not only say, hey, we're going into closed session, we would actually list the specific subsection of the exception that we were relying on for closed session. So whether that was real estate or personnel or collective bargaining or something else, pending litigation, we would actually, as I recall, at least for some of the years I was on the board, list the subsection that closed session topics were going to be confined to in the notice. I don't know that that's required, but either way, that was how we did it. And a public entity wanting to comply with your amendment could do that, couldn't they?
Well, a lot of public entities simply on every meeting they post, they just put on there that they may go into closed session.
Well, yeah, which is hopelessly vague. And then the minutes, you know, will tell you a vote and not really little else, right?
Well, now they don't really tell you, but they'd have to put out something after the closed meeting identifying what purpose it was they went into a closed meeting.
Thank you. Mr. President, I have an amendment to the amendment. I move that it be adopted.
Senator from the first, as an amendment, please send it forward. Has it been distributed?
It has not, but I would actually request that it be distributed insofar as the only copy is no longer even in my hands.
From the first, are you requesting a waiver of the reading? The senator from the first is requesting a waiver of the reading pending a distribution of the amendment. If there is no objection to that motion, the amendment will be distributed before he's allowed to close. Senator from the first.
You know, Mr. President, upon further contemplation in the interests of giving the body fair notice as to what my amendment says, I actually would withdraw my request that reading be waived. I would request that it be read.
The amendment has been sent to the copier, Senator.
That can happen. We'll just handle it that way. My request for waiver stands. We'll get it out to folks as quickly as we can. That's on me.
The senator has requested a waiver of the reading. Does any senator object? Seeing none, the reading shall be waived. Senator, would you like to explain your amendment while it's being copied with the understanding that you will not be recognized to close until the amendment has been distributed?
Yes, Mr. President. Thank you. And thank you for your latitude for a relatively new member of the body. I think that's twice in 2 weeks now I've made that reference on the floor, so I'll try not to make that reference too many more times. My amendment, and this is coming from a constituent, there's been a House bill to this effect that was introduced a couple of years ago by a former representative from the other side of the aisle, I might add, requires that closed meetings be tape-recorded verbatim, but specifies that the tape recording only be reviewed by a judge in camera in an enforcement proceeding. The idea behind the amendment to the amendment is to make absolutely certain that what is going on behind closed doors that the public does not have access to is preserved so that somebody on the back end can make a meaningful determination based on what was actually said in the room of whether the Sunshine Law was adhered to or not. The constituent that I've referred to is a member of the press and views it as an important public accountability issue. I think that it's a sufficiently important issue that I would ask that my amendment to the amendment be roll called if I could get four members standing.
Does the senator have four members standing? Having sufficient number, there will be a roll call. Senator, are you done with your explanation or are you continuing?
I am, Mr. President. Thank you.
The senator from the first moves for the adoption of his amendment. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? The senator from the 14th, for what reason do you rise?
From the first.
Senator from the first, do you yield?
I do.
Proceed.
Senator, I have to apologize to you because I was trying to put these amendments together, and I was trying to multitask and found myself losing sight of where I was. Can you, in a brief way, repeat what your amendment's all about since we don't have it in front of us?
Hopefully it's been distributed by now, but my amendment requires that closed meetings be tape recorded, but that tape recording would only be available in a court action to determine whether the Sunshine Law was actually followed. And the reason it's a concern, and I appreciate the Senator from Boone's underlying amendment, which heightens the disclosure requirement that public bodies have to adhere to. But this goes one step further and hopefully gives us the ability to actually prove in a court of law when a violation's occurred. I mean, with the heightened disclosure, you at least, the public at least gets some detail as to the precise nature of the sunshine exclusion that was in effect. But with my amendment, somebody can actually discover whether, in fact, the public body stuck to the topic. And that's a real concern.
Would this doors include are closed. Executive sessions?
Yes, closed meetings, executive
okay, so
session, yes.
I did stand up, but I do have to tell you that I would have some issue with this. As you know, I sit on a school board just like you have in the past, and in some of these executive sessions, what we're dealing with are hiring teachers and administrative staff. We are also talking about some of the problems or that may exist with certain staff within a school district. We're also talking about lawsuits, you know, and some of that stuff is just, it's really intimate information that the board needs to discuss openly amongst themselves without any threat. And I can't give you a case in point because it's an executive session issue.
Right.
But there are some monetary issues that come up in closed session that you don't want to have recorded. And I know that...
Mr. President. Three senators on the floor.
Over. With the amendments pending on the informal calendar.
The senator from Cole has asked the bill be laid over. It shall be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from the 32nd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move this Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
Senator from the 32nd, I missed that. Was that order of business to go to announcements?
Yes, Mr. President.
Announcements. Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate Republican Caucus will be meeting tomorrow at 9 a.m. in the lounge.
We're on the order of business of announcements. Senator from the 30th.
Mr. President, your Committee on Judiciary, Criminal, and Civil Jurisprudence will meet on adjournment in the Senate lounge.
Senator from the 10th.
Mr. President, the Minority Caucus will be meeting tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m. and Senator, the senior senator from St. Charles's office.
Further announcements. Senator from Boone.
Committee on Appropriations will meet at 8:30 in the morning. As we do most mornings. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further announcements? Seeing none, the senator from the 32nd.
Thank you, Mr. President. One more time, no further business coming for the body. I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion of the senator from the 32nd. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those opposed, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate shall stand adjourned under the rules.